and welcome to the All Japan Women's Destiny podcast. I'm your host, JD. Welcome to another episode as we go through the history of All Japan Women's Professional Wrestling through the classics episodes that you can find on various places of the internet. I vastly encourage to follow along and learn and enjoy the history of this just awesome women's wrestling promotion of the past. This is a spin-off in conjunction with the Red Leaf Retrocast. That is the proper episode where these come from. We hope you enjoy our audio and our discussions over the various wrestlers and the matches in which you go through the ages. If you like what you hear and you want more content, please consider checking out the Patreon. That is patreon.com/redleafretrocast, all one word, where we also cover LLPW, various other women's wrestling promotions of the past, and the project that the whole reason it exists is the Joshi 2010s journey, where we go through coming out of the dark ages of Joshi professional wrestling and really learning and having fun with wrestlers that we're very familiar with to this day to ones that we may have missed out on. I hope you enjoy the audio you're about to hear covering AJW. And if you want more, please, again, consider signing up to the Patreon and leaving us reviews over at iTunes, Spotify, and the like, all your favorite podcasting outlets in which you listen to AJW and the Red Leaf Retrocast. Enjoy. Episode 89, All Japan Women Classics. Here we are. My God, we are at the end of February 1994. Hey, we're at Cork and Hall here. And it's a sold-out show. 2,300 people, standing room only. You watch these. The thing is, if you watch these shows, I'm sure that they're elbows to elbows, knees deep in people there. But you can't help but notice when you watch these matches, even into the main event, in that hard camera side, there's always a number of seats available in those bleachers. But hey, different times, different attendance announcing, different strategies in order to try to get people in the building or to make your product seem hotter. And that's kind of the moral of AJW. In 1994, or at least the story they're trying to tell. Akira Hokuto is more or less retired. She's on her retirement road, which was meant to be kind of nothing. She was supposed to go to Mexico, and then that was kind of that. But she's back, and there's a lot of publicity going on in All Japan Women around this time, because they have announced the Tokyo Dome. The big Tokyo Dome show, super show, involving all the promotions and women's sports. And something I kind of also went over, it's also affecting other companies and their booking. Head on over to the Patreon for the LLPW reviews, in which I've just finished August 1994 for LLPW. And title changes in the mix, just to see what they can put on for the Tokyo Dome show. But it is All Japan Women's show at the end of the day, and what they got to do is sell a fuck ton of tickets. They got to try to get Akira Hokuto back into this promotion as much as possible, causing as much publicity as she can, along with what Bull Nakano is going to do in America. Maybe they can get fly-ins. Maybe they can get some Western publicity, pay-per-view buys. They're trying anything and everything in order to sell this thing. And boy, heading into and through March, this show in particular was meant to grab some other different type of buzz, along with the build towards Yokohama Arena, which, hey, just spoke about that on the Stardom section on the podcast proper there, or if you're listening on the podcast proper, you just heard it. But Yokohama Arena, they sold it well last year with the big launch of kind of the interpromotional showcase. And the big thing for the Yokohama show coming up, which is titled Wrestling Queendom, is more or less just kind of built on the main event of Hokuto and Kendori in a dream tag match against Aja Kong and Bull Nakano, the reignition of their Gokaku Dome days. So if that show doesn't sell out, it's because the card kind of wasn't really built the same way as it was the year prior. Although there are other matches of interest towards the fan base, but will it be enough to sell, you know, 16,000 tickets? I don't know. We'll have to find out. But what are the moves that they're doing to try to get this? Well, if we go on, if you go on over to the Observer newsletter or some old weekly pro wrestling articles from February and March of 1994 and the lead up to the Yokohama Arena show, and it does affect this show too, but more or less it's just news, is all the outlets are covering kind of one thing right now, and that is the publicity stunt of one Tonya Harding. So if you I remember as a kid what Tonya Harding did to the figure skating Olympic women's team. But for those that may not have been born or remember who Tonya Harding is, essentially she took out a hit on her fellow teammate and took her out with breaking some legs, and she gets kicked out of the... She gets caught, sued, jail time, essentially. She's under house arrest around this time in 94, and big legal ramifications surrounding the figure skating Olympic team of the United States of America and Tonya Harding doing essentially a hit job without killing somebody. Pretty wild stuff. It's still a joke that I use to this day of just trying to take your opponents out, taking out your competition. But what does that have to do with All Japan Women? Well, the publicity stunt the Matsunagas tried to do, particularly two of the brothers, two of the four, is they want to sign Tonya Harding upwards of $2 million and have her wrestle at the Tokyo Dome is the end goal. And step one is getting her to the Yokohama Arena show so she can see what All Japan Women Wrestling is all about. And Akira Hokuto's in the news because she's trying to do a stunt of her own where she's going to train her and make her a heel. It's phenomenal stuff. It's a fantastic read. So I will skip all of the kind of lead up to that because it's basically what I just said. And I will skip all the way to the March 28th Observer, which basically only talks about Tonya Harding. So here we go. Publicity stunt regarding getting Tonya Harding to sign with the All Japan Women's promotion on March 16th, as Meltzer says, I'm sure you're all aware, Harding pled guilty to obstruction of justice, a felony, and was sentenced to 3 years supervised probation, fined $160,000, ordered to quit the United States Figure Skating Association, ending her career, and ordered to undergo psychiatric testing. Harding's only response when asked about the reported $2 million offer from AJW by the nest of news reporters who came outside where she was living, which was a major topic of conversation on radio talk shows earlier this week, was "get real and no comments" to just about every other question asked. The lead story on Entertainment Tonight on March 17th was on Harding and AJW, which featured several clips of the December 6th Sumo Hall card and the offer, which they reported still stands. So AJW is not denying any of this at all. They're still saying we can get her, boys. Anyways, I digress. Move on. ET reported Harding's representatives were looking to gather more information on AJW and the details of the offer. The clips that aired were largely of the Kandori Akira Hokuto main event and showed photos and talked about Aja Kong and Bull Nakano and showed a perspective photo of Tanya wearing Aja Kong face paint. Okay, so it's not the famous Yokohama Arena Kandori Akira Hokuto match. It's the one I thought was actually better, which ended on the shoot punch knockout, which I thought was pretty cool. That's the one they're showing. So the most recent one. Harding's forced to leave of the figure skating world removed her from the world championships that were scheduled to start on March 22nd in Chiba, Japan, a city about an hour north of Tokyo. The negotiation sessions in Japan that were scheduled are out the window. However, according to the March 22nd Nikon Sports, Toshikuni Matsunaga, the vice president of AJW's office, aka the younger brother of Takashi Matsunaga, was quoted in all the newspapers and appeared on several television shows in the past week. One of the four brothers, who are the co-owners of the company, was leaving that day for Portland, Oregon, for a meeting with Harding's representatives. However, according to our sources within the company, Harding's representatives are overloaded with work stemming from her guilty plea and numerous offers, including movie deals, that they haven't been able to arrange for a negotiation session. And privately, these in the promotion don't see the deal as much of a possibility. God damn that run-on sentence. Calm down there, Big Dave. Takashi Matsunaga told the press in Japan on March 19th, the company was still working to bring her to the Yokohama Arena show, but given Harding's legal status, it might be tough. She can't travel outside Oregon, Washington, and California without petitioning the court, and the odds of being able to pull that off in a short period of time would be difficult, which would also mean it would be under court discretion whether she'd be able to accept the offer. There has already been interest in the U.S. to pay-per-view the Tokyo Dome show on November 10th, providing Harding would wrestle on the show, although one would have to think the odds of this ever taking place now are slim. They almost shouldn't even be discussed. However, in the past week, reporters from France, Germany, ABC TV, and the Wall Street Journal have all come to the group offices in Tokyo for interviews for upcoming stories. The only other story reported in Japan this week regarding this was another interview by Akira Hokuto, who spent 1 week wrestling in Korea, collision in Korea, boys, and returned and once again said she'd like to be Harding's trainer because the two have the same look. Hokuto said she'd be the best teacher for Harding as a heel. And in that promotion, this would be Harding's role because she said she'd be the best heel wrestler. My God. So not only is this publicity stunt totally obvious, but everyone's biting on it like a feeding candy to a child. It is incredible. We got major reporting going to AJW. They're getting to the news. They're saying, yeah, we're trying. We're doing it. And people are falling for it. And then, the other unfortunate news that's coming out for AJW is the announcement of All Japan's television show being cut to 30 minutes this past week was followed by another announcement every bit as potentially disastrous for the company. Nippon TV, which considered dropping the show because one of the sponsors pulled out, but eventually went with the 30-minute format, announced its new season schedule in Japan. And for those that don't know, the television season in Japan starts in April as opposed to September in the U.S. The new schedule is only announced a couple weeks before the start of the season. And in this case, AJW was moved from Sundays around midnight, which is more or less a death slot in itself. Now they're being moved with 30 minutes to Saturday nights at 2:30 in the morning. Brutal. So the issue is the new time slot eliminates any sort of just the general public kind of viewing this on television. And while television has improved, this is from Meltzer. You know what? I'll just read his words rather than sum it up. While television has improved to be an important be as important in Japan as far as drawing fans, because so many more big name wrestlers are known to the general public as celebrities, and their name value without television is strong, it will have severe negative effects in two ways as far as getting the young wrestlers. And really, the lifeblood of young wrestlers is the lifeblood of the company. So, ever since the Crush Gals left and the slot's been dropped, while the midnight showing isn't the greatest, it's still, like, doable, but the Saturday night in the middle of the night is not good. And he's saying, Meltzer's saying, that it's going to be harder to recruit people in general because now less people are going to know about it. And as we see from this roster and how ravaged it is by injuries and the like, that's going to be something to pay attention to as we get into, like, 1995. With one more year of this same roster, and the more the international or interpromotional matches start getting stale. And they kind of already have. But with the announcement of the Tokyo Dome, the buzz of the promotion will kind of stay throughout 94 in that regard. So it's kind of one thing after another with this with AJW in early 94 is the loss of their television slot. The publicity stunt of Tonya Harding, still trying to sell out Yokohama Arena and building towards a big-ass Tokyo Dome show. Ambitious and crazy is definitely ways to describe it. So, what are they doing if they can't, if you see the writing on the wall that it's going to be tougher to recruit women, what are they doing to try to make up that ground along with Hokuto and Nakano leaving this promotion on a full-time basis? Because that's what we're gearing up towards, is Nakano going to the WWF and Hokuto being a special attraction wrestler for the remainder of her time. Well, we get to this classic episode of 1989, and I will say the next two classic episodes are going to be over that Yokohama Arena show, according to the classics. But then when I looked at Classic 92, it jumps all the way to June of 94. So hopefully the plan is I watch the entire Yokohama Arena show, and then I can find something in between April and May to kind of fill in that one show gap. Otherwise, I will kind of split that into two, because that is interesting nonetheless. So we have February 27th, Corken Hall, sold out. We start off with a Chikako Shiratori and Kumiko Maekawa match, defeating Rii Tamada and Tomoko Watanabe. This was very solid. It's a nice little rookie match. And rather than continuing to blabber on over that, I'm just going to move on to the good stuff. Suzuka Minami defeats Mima Shimoda, and this is interesting. And while the match delved into its usual Suzuka Minami type format where we get on the ground, it's a singles match involving her. Mima Shimoda is showing a heavy, heavy amount of improvement. And with LCO in big singles matches on the show, AJW is really, really trying to push four people higher and seeing who kind of grabs the brass ring, if you will. It's Shimoda, it's Mita, it's Takako Inoue, and it's Saki Hasegawa. Those are your four. And you can kind of see, based on their card position, where the promotion currently sees them. What they see in Kaoru Ito is beyond my understanding. Maybe it's because they know she can take falls, and they know they can stick her in kind of any role in on the card, except main events, and she'll kind of, they know she won't mess anything up. Maybe that's the reason. But in terms of Shimoda, I think she's definitely past Suzuka Minami at this point in time. And this could have been a good opportunity to kind of put her over the top. And they didn't go with that. They went with, they're sticking with Suzuka Minami. I mean, she's been there since the 80s. She's very much established on this roster, but they're not going to push her. So, and she's in openers like this. I fail to see why that would have been an issue, but The match was just okay. And then we get to the crux of the card. Bull Nakano versus Etsuko Mita, that music you heard at the start. And Etsuko Mita is growing on people. She's a massive, like, 5'10". Bull Nakano isn't as big as she used to be, but she looks like she's hurting, guys. Just like in the last episode when she hit the leg drop in that big tag match and she just immediately grabbed her back. Things are affecting her more and more. And she might be thinking at this time to wind it down and do something a little easier, at least in terms of going to the WWF, because even though their schedule is not easy, it's certainly easier than HAW. But here we are. This was a big time power match. Very enjoyable. Went 1 out of 3. Mita is hitting her Death Valley driver now, and it looks fantastic, but she isn't pinning Bull Nakano with it, unlike the Grand Prix last year, when she finally hit it and got a big win. What we got, though, was not the usual Bull Nakano ravages over you, pounds you into the dirt, and Mita fought back. She did a good job selling, especially with her height. She did a good job trying to lay it in when it mattered and sold for Bull Nakano when it mattered. She loses off the big leg drop, so it's not like she's getting beat with a German suplex or the powerbomb or anything. Bull Nakano's having to go to the top and get her, so that's a good sign for Mita. LCO is clearly trying to get out of Hokuto's shadow. They're trying to get them kind of on a more bigger basis as a tag team, because that little division needs some help right now. And these are steps heading there. We're 3 months into the LCO push of sorts. They haven't quite won anything, but you can tell they're getting in bigger positions. This tag match went on forever. It was like 20 minutes. Takako Inoue and Hota defeating Ito and Kyoko Inoue. Where these matches struggle for me is more along the lines of... It's Kaori Ito and her limited offense. I don't know how many times I have to go into that, so not going to do it anymore. But it's also with a weirdness of Yumika Hota and Kyoko Inoue, where Hota doesn't want to sell anything. She wants to just kick you as hard as she can. And Kyoko Inoue intercepts. Everyone has a big flaw in their game. And what Takako Inoue's flaw is compared to Hota and Inoue, or Kyoko Inoue, is Takako doesn't have the presence yet. She's very much in that line of Miki Honda over in LLPW, where good wrestler, can hang with anybody, you can conceivably buy them beating anybody because of how good they are, but the ring presence and charisma just quite isn't there yet, and you think all they need is an extra little push to get there. And when I'm watching this match and I'm seeing Hota kind of sandbag her tag partner and taking all the bigger spots, if you will, who knows, maybe it was designed that way on purpose, but we're not seeing Takako Inoue against Kyoko Inoue in long stretches. We're seeing Takako still with Kaori Ito and people underneath her. Maybe that makes more sense rather than the whole sandbag comment. It's very much... Hota has the veteran advantage in this, senpai kohai type stuff. And Kyoko Inoue, crowd loves her. Crowd's into Kyoko Inoue. She hasn't seen quite the push that she did in 91 and 92. She's really taken a step back in 93, and especially here in 94 on the losing effort of matches like this. But the big talking point here now is the 3WA tag title match. It's a 2 out of 3 falls match. It's Yamada and Toyota against Aja Kong and Saki Hasegawa. Now, we've seen Kong and Hasegawa teaming more and more, kind of at the end of 93 and now into 94. And Saki Hasegawa is getting... I fail to call it a push because she's not winning anything, but... Again, just like I talked with LCO and Takakao, you see where they're at on the card, and they're getting put in these positions. You're starting to believe in them. So it's that sort of push. Not a true push, where they're going to like win a title, but we're getting there. And this match, I'm not shitting you, goes 48 minutes long. It's so long, guys. It is a long, long, long match. Toyo and Yamada trade their places. It's very fast paced. It's a lot of Saki Asagawa selling. The whole match is like that. And she actually gets a big pin over Manami Toyota here. Okay. And then Toyo and Yamada get the next two. I mean, it's a good little format there that they always stick to. So where we're at in the match is Saki Asagawa. Yes, she's been dealing with neck soreness injuries. Her back's killing her. But the other three people in this match aren't really feeling the injury bug quite yet. Or at least the fatigue bug is probably a better way to put it. If you were paying attention to some of the house shows and some other matches that were happening earlier in the year, people might think that Saki Asagawa is getting a big ass push because she's going to 30 minute draws with Manami Toyota. They're having singles matches against each other. They're Yamada's having matches against Aja Kong and Hasegawa as well. But really, it's really just a good build to make this tag match something. That's what they were doing on the tour. That's what they were doing for the lead up. So Saki Asagawa isn't the automatic weak link here. I thought they did a pretty okay job of doing that. And Aja Kong is really coming into her own now. This is finally like starting to see big time signs that Aja Kong is becoming a big single star. Yes, she has the title. Yes, she was put over by Bull Nakano, but she was always like, she wasn't the focus of the promotion. And still, in 1994 here, it's Manami Toyota and Toshi Yamada as the big tag team. We're sticking with the 80s beat of big time tag matches. It has nothing to do with the single star not being put in the position. It's just, what can we do to make the most exciting match in the main event? And I think that's where the mentality still is within AJW. Just a lot of strong moves, a lot of strong pace. I could go move by move, but what happens is Saki Asagawa gets the ultimate finisher put on her with Toyota's JOC with the big Yamada flash kick off the top, and that's how the match ends. It's a long one, boys. I could probably do a move by move basis, and that would be another half hour with how much that this was. But I went 3 out of 3 on this match. I thought this was phenomenal. I think this is a must-watch kind of show, and actually, I was going to go on Cage Match and Mark, but it doesn't have any recommendations yet. I'm going to recommend it at some point. I got to do a write-up on there, I guess, because nobody else is here, but I thought the show was pretty good. We got two good singles matches, a nice little opener. I wasn't too thrilled about Hota and Kyoko Inoue going at it one-on-one. I thought Hota would bring a little bit more coming off her hand match with Aja Kong, but it still seems to be the same old Hota. Failure of charisma development, I would say, they're coming off. We're getting past that, and we're getting to stronger people moving up the card. And I'm really excited to see where Saki Asagawa continues to grow from here. What's going to be her role going through the spring and into the summer of the Grand Prix? Will she get a lot more? Will she be in contention at the end? And off the top of my head, I don't know what her role is on the Tokyo Dome. I don't remember. So very exciting. Toyo Yamada, still excellent tag team. Really getting me to think further over their Hall of Fame case when it comes to it. But I guess I'm still on that fence of the team wasn't around long enough. But I don't know. I mean, we've been seeing them team together for 3-4 years now. And it's really the last 2.5 years that they're in main events like this a lot. And if Yamada had a more prominent singles push, I know this is weird to say for a tag team in the Hall of Fame, but that may have given her more accreditation for the tag team. So, excellent match. But I'm not done. On March 3rd, so a few days after this show, they did Saint Battle Day, okay? And why I bring this up is because there's an angle on the show involving Chikako Shiratori, where she loses a tag match against Tomoko and Chiprita Asari, teaming with Ritamata I'm really into this Rii Tamada. I'm really enjoying watching her wrestle and develop. There's a rookie, Miki Yokoue, in the opener. But anyways, Chikako Shiratori loses this match, and then she comes out in the semi-main event, okay, with a new name and new look, and she's going up against Toshio Yamada as Chikako Hasegawa. Notably, Saki Hasegawa, not on this show. Maybe she got beat up on that. You know what? I can look up that right now. Saki Hasegawa. I want to see what happens in 1994 here, because I know she eventually goes the Blizzard Yuki route, and she hangs out in Oz Academy a lot. But, okay, let's see here. She definitely still has a lot of matches, so we're not done with her yet. It looks like just the night off. That's what it looks like there. Well, that's good. I was a little worried, because I know she gets severely injured at one point in time. I just can't quite remember when. I can estimate it, but anyways, back to the same battle day. Chikako Hasegawa, the former Shiratori, she goes almost 30 minutes with Toshio Yamada, which would have been a draw. 29-32. Excellent, excellent match. You really get, like, especially those last 10 minutes where they cross that 20-minute mark. Lot of drama there. It's a big-time angle, and you can totally see why a lot of Joshi kind of go back to these kinds of angles where they get a new name, they get a new look, and they show up on the same show. I mean, Kagetsu did the same thing, but then she got pounded by Dynamite Kansai. The main event of that show was Bull teaming with Kyoko Inoue against Kong and Toyota. I watched that. It was just kind of a nice little background match. You know, 1-2 out of 3. But the real story there was the reinvention of Chikako Hasegawa against Toshio Yamada. So keep an eye on her. She could be another young person they're trying to see what she's got. Maybe she'll grab the bull by the horns. And that will do it for this episode of AJW. We'll be back next time with the big Yokohama Arena show with Kandori and Hokuto teaming up.